Hey everyone, welcome to Just Mental Health with Steph and M, the podcast where we discuss mental health through a social justice lens. I'm Emily.
And I'm Stephanie. A quick disclaimer before we get started. We are mental health professionals, but this is not to be taken as professional advice.
We are also aware that our privilege may cloud our perspective on some topics, and we not only welcome but encourage you to message us with criticism and correction. Let's get started. Okie dokie. The small business today is a friend of mine. He actually is also a friend of Jennifer, both of our former supervisor. And it's really funny because when I was deciding if I wanted to move to Chicago or New York, she connected me with him and we went back and forth messaging. And then I was like, oh, thank you for the help. And then we never talked again. And then I bumped into him here, but we didn't recognize each other. And then we became Facebook friends and look, and we noticed we had a bunch of messages and we're like, that's so weird. And we're like, oh my God, you're that guy. That it was really funny. Anyway, so he wrote a book called America on Two Wheels, which is really cool. And he it's a book about how he biked from Florida to California. In 2015, 36-year-old Chicago resident David King found himself at personal and professional crossroads. Feeling bored and restless, he longed to strike out on a crazy journey in a quest for beauty, kindness, and inspiration as to where his life should go from there. Having taken up biking as a hobby, he consulted a map of the United States and, in a spur of the moment decision, vowed to ride across the country from San Diego to Miami. So he talks about his journey. More than 3,000 miles across mountains, desert, tropical flatlands, physical and mental challenges. So it's really cool. And he's a super, super nice guy. So definitely interesting. You can get it on Amazon, paperback and Kindle. Yeah, $8.99 on Kindle, $14.99 on paperback. Yeah.
From Florida to California.
California to Florida, San Diego.
California to Florida.
Yeah, I had it the wrong
Oh
way.
my gosh.
I know. So
That
he's
is really
obviously
funny.
a big biker.
Yeah.
We have like a group chat with, it's called Chicago Jews on Bikes. And he's in the group chat. I cannot compete with him, obviously. It's like I'm like the slow one in the group. But anyway, yeah, so definitely check out the book if you're interested. And now a quick ad. So today we're going to be talking about ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. So there was one major study, and then there have been other studies since then, which basically show that adverse childhood experiences, so traumas you experience as a child, will affect you later in life. There's like a little like test, you can take with all of the lists of adverse childhood experiences, and then you get your ACE score. And the higher your score, the higher likelihood of different mental health and behavioral issues in the future. So let's first talk about what those ACEs are. Sorry, I had it pulled up.
No, it's all good. There's quite a few. There's well, now I have to pull it up too. Yeah, so there's what is it like a it's like a test of 10 questions or 12 questions or something.
Yeah, I
It's
just
brief.
the test. and I don't know where it is. This is so embarrassing.
You just took the test, really?
Yeah, I was looking through it and I just like took it because it was there and it was, I had it pulled up and I don't know what I did.
My ACE score is not good.
Oh no.
Well, so okay. Like when you take it and you get a high score, right? You're like, oh my God, I got a high score. I probably got the highest score in the class. And the teacher's like, that's not good. And you're like, oh. Yeah, that was.
Okay, so I found them. Okay, so the 10 are physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical neglect, emotional neglect, mental illness of a relative, incarcerated relative, one parent, like domestic violence in the household, substance use in the household, divorce, or, you know, having one parent not in the household.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of abuse. I was trying to say neglect and abuse, and then I said abuse. abuse, like any type of abuse, not getting your needs met. So neglect, seeing your parent, suffer from a mental illness, substance abuse, incarceration, having a parent not in the home. So a lot of it is attachment stuff, which we've talked about in past episodes, you know, attachment being this innate need for all of us to have one caregiver that shows up for us consistently. And if they ever don't show up or you need them and they're not there, that creates issues later in life. So that can show up in any of these forms, having a child or having a parent not around, having them go to prison, all of those things. So there's, you know, the study was, it was, the original study was 1700 people. And
California, right? Is where they started. And then they keep doing studies.
Yeah.
And, so, but that's just something to note because it was only in that one geographic area at first.
At first. Yeah.
Yeah. But then they've done larger studies and have shown that this is a consistent pattern. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. And that's like, you know, with most studies and like, you have to pay attention, like mm-hmm. where it's done, what are the demographics, but they have repeated it with different races, genders, socioeconomic statuses, which we'll talk about in a minute. So they found that you have a point, for each of the ACEs, and the higher your ACE score, the more struggles you're likely to have. So I found this pyramid. So it shows the negative outcomes. So the higher the ACE score, the higher you go in the pyramid. So the bottom of the pyramid is generational embodiment, historical trauma, then race and social conditions and local context, complex trauma, allostatic load and disruptive neurological development, coping and adoption of health risk behavior, burden of disease, distress, criminalization and stigmatization, and then stigmatization, and then early death is at the top. I also found another graphic. It has them separated into two categories: abuse, neglect, and household dysfunction. So abuse being physical, emotional, sexual, neglect being physical, emotional, household dysfunction, mental illness, incarcerated relative, interpersonal violence, substance abuse, and divorce. And, you know, we want to include the separation or like not having like a parent in your household, a parent that's in your household that leaves the household, because not everyone has parents that are married. Especially given when the study was done, that was before same-sex marriage was legal. So like, mm-hmm. divorce is not, you know, inclusive. And this one actually has expanded ACEs that maybe weren't included in the original study, such as living in foster care, bullying, community violence, neighborhood safety, and racism. And I think
that's cool.
Those are better because they are more inclusive, because obviously racism is a traumatic, you know, is filled with trauma, community violence, which is associated with socioeconomic status. So includes that, neighborhood safety, another thing that, you know, it looks like the original study was kind of more geared toward like higher socioeconomic status, which, you know, that's just kind of like an ongoing problem in research.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm just giving the bullet points before we dig deeper. So I found, I did it again. I found the list where it talks about racial disparities.
I like that it also included being in like the foster care system. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting that that wasn't, you know, included the first time around, because that's a huge, I mean, not only is that a big trauma for a lot of people, but typically kids enter the foster care system because they've already experienced some trauma or household dysfunction or neglect. So it's almost like, okay, with, you know, children in the foster care system are at much higher rates for these things because they've already experienced a lot of abuse and neglect, or, you know, just some adverse experience. And then they were removed from their home with their biological parents, placed into another situation where, unfortunately, and I've worked with kids in the foster care system, they get re-abused.
Yeah.
Not every foster parent, but sometimes it's not even intentional. And the system itself, the foster care system, or, you know, CPS, that system is a broken system. And so it's, kids don't always get the care or the help that they need. Neither do the parents that are trying to get their children back. And neither do the foster parents that are trying to raise kids with, you know, trauma reactions, with PTSD. So it's just, that's interesting that, that they now include that. And I think that's really, really important to note.
Yeah, that's a good point that, these kind of like one will lead to the other, like a parent being incarcerated will put you in foster care, and then care often leads to abuse, or one instance of abuse will lead to foster care, which leads to more abuse, or like, yeah. And so I think, you know, and that is just common in general, like, you know, both of us having worked with highly traumatized families, it's like kind of like when it rains, it pours, like, other, and the same sort of like emotional dysregulation issues or like PTSD symptoms can lead to more than one trauma, or can be caused by more than one trauma, and they kind of accumulate. So it is unfortunately true that a lot of people that have a trauma, I think most people who have one trauma have at least one other.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I know anyone with just like one ACE score, you know, like, because there is so many factors that that influence that. You're right that when it rains, it pours. And did you go through your bullet points? Because I have a,
So
hold on to it.
Quick stats, key findings. Economic hardship and divorce or separation of a parent or guardian are the most common ACEs. This is in in the United States. Just under half of children in the country have experienced at least one ACE, which is similar to the rate of exposure found in a 2011-2012 survey. And Arkansas was the state with the highest prevalence of ACEs. 1 in 10 children nationally has experienced 3 or more ACEs. 5 states, Arizona, Arkansas, Montana, New Mexico, and Ohio, as many as 1 in 7 had 3 or more ACEs. Oh, I'm from Ohio. That's sad.
Yeah.
Children of different races and ethnicities do not experience ACEs equally. Nationally, 61% of Black and non-Hispanic children and 51% of Hispanic children have experienced at least one ACE, compared to 40% of white non-Hispanic children and only 23% of Asian non-Hispanic children. In every region, prevalence of ACEs is lowest among Asian non-Hispanic children and highest among Black non-Hispanic children.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really
sad statistics.
I know.
Like that is so high.
It is. And unfortunately, it's not a surprise.
Yeah, right. It's just hearing it like, and this was in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't even in like a country where there's like war on their land or like a famine. Like this is in the U.S. that this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
That's really sad. So, you know, one of the things is like, well, so why is that important? Why do we need to know someone's ACE score? Why were they even studying this? Because they realized there was a strong correlation, between people that had higher ACE scores and then, from childhood experiences and then their, health outcomes or maybe, health issues that they would experience later as adults. One of the things that people, the higher your ACE score is, they've correlated you're more likely to experience like heart disease or diabetes, things like that. You're more likely to have those issues. Also, substance abuse is really high for people with high ACE scores, which as a therapist, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But people may not always think of it that way. Substance abuse is a way of coping with trauma and with stress. So it's not necessarily an issue itself. It doesn't just start out of nowhere. Like it's usually an attempt to cope or manage or find a way to deal with trauma. So it makes sense why if you have more trauma, you're more likely to have substance abuse issues. And the way that what they call it, that term of what is happening is toxic stress. So they're saying like, if you've had these events happen in childhood, then it's likely that this caused toxic stress for you. And toxic stress is this excessive activation of your stress response system, which we know would be like, you know, sort of how PTSD happens in people, that fight or flight, freeze or fawn, that system that we have that is supposed to keep us safe and supposed to help us in traumatic experiences or dangerous situations. If that is activated too much for too long, it has a lot of damage, not only mentally, but physiologically on the body. And so they've linked that toxic stress with these other health issues that people can get as adults. One thing I remember someone saying, it's not enough to just link it, right? To say, okay, if you have an ACE score of 3 and higher, your chances of heart disease like double or triple or something. I don't know if that statistic's true. I'm just throwing that out there. But they said it's not just that. It's we got to figure out the why. What is happening in between? What happens from the time that someone is a child to when they're maybe 45 and they develop heart disease? What led to that? It's not like you just have trauma and bam, you've got a disease. And so one of the things that, you know, they talk about when they talk about ACE scores is the behaviors that come from these trauma responses, ways to cope with it. So again, like we said, substance use is a behavior, of someone trying to cope.
Also an ACE for the next generation.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And that's why it can just repeat itself. But yeah. And so, you know, they've said the theory is that if you have a high ACE score, you may not be doing, you may not be engaging in healthy habits. You may be engaging in higher risk, more unhealthy behaviors that then cause these diseases later in life. And that's why it's important to know, I think, for physicians, I think they need to be aware of, you know, if they're treating someone with some chronic issues, maybe you should take a look at their ACE score. Or if you're treating children or someone, maybe you see that they're doing a lot of behaviors that we would consider very unhealthy, very high risk. As a physician, you could use that trauma-informed lens and sort of step in and say, hey, is there something else going on here? Do we need to get some different intervention? Because one of the things that they say that people who've experienced ACEs, it's not a final sentence. It doesn't mean that just because you have had these experiences or you have a high ACE score that you're doomed to have these issues. Because there's lots of things you can do to change those behaviors or to, you know, to help yourself start to heal, help your nervous system heal from trauma. Therapy, meditation, exercise, getting access to healthcare, having strong relationships, having safe relationships with positive people, especially children, having at least one, isn't that what they say? At least one positive a relationship with an adult.
Yeah.
Within a reliable adult, whether it's family or not, can be a big, you know, game changer. So, I'm making a long point, but I'm getting to it now. The interesting thing to me about all of that is many of those things that they're saying you should do to prevent these later health, these physical and mental issues, are also very much dependent on someone's access to those things.
Oh, I was gonna,
you were gonna say that. Of course, you were gonna say the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because like, if you don't have access to good healthcare, or you experience a lot of bias from your healthcare providers for whatever reason, that's gonna impact, you know, your ability to get quality healthcare, to get a preventative healthcare. To get good treatment. If you live in a, you know, if you live in a neighborhood where it's a food desert, where do you get access to healthy food? You know, maybe you don't have the ability or the money or, you know, any way to get to therapy. You don't have any way to learn meditation, which is a great thing, but it's such a practice. Like if you are a busy person, or if you have a lot of things going on in life, or you're taking care of a bunch of children, or you're taking care of somebody else, you know, when do you have time to sit down and practice meditation? Like in real life, when people are already struggling and dealing with things and coping as best they can, if there's not those social supports, not the community supports, and there's not professional supports, then what can they do?
Right. I made a list as you were talking.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to respond to. Loved all of your points.
thank you.
While we were talking about toxic stress and the how the behaviors, like the trauma leads to certain behaviors, which leads to heart disease and. That's definitely true, but also the stress itself, you know, like your blood pressure and like, so it's definitely like a correlation, like the indirect, this leads to this, which leads to the final outcome of heart disease, for example, but like heart disease itself the stress and the trauma itself and the effect that it has on the body. I have not read The Body Keeps the Score, but I hear it's really good. And the basic premise, have you read it?
Yeah. That might be another episode because I have some thoughts on that. But
yeah. But the basic premise, right, is that the stress is stored in the body, and then that causes health.
Mm-hmm. And your body remembers it and carries it with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the fact that healthcare providers don't ask about ACEs is an example of how mental health and physical health are not connected enough in society and the healthcare system, which is like an ongoing issue, because so many doctors just want to treat the physical problem, but so much of it is actually mental. Like, stress causes all sorts, as we're talking about, all sorts of mental health physical health issues. And if doctors don't ask about it, then they're going to be just throwing all sorts of medications at people that maybe they don't need, that what really they need is therapy, or mindfulness, meditation, you know, all of those resources. Mm-hmm. And it's also another way the healthcare system fails people of color and people of lower socioeconomic status, because as
fat people.
Yes. Yeah. As we've seen, there's a racial and socioeconomic status disparity in ACE scores. And so they're the ones that are more likely that need to be asked about their ACE score. And the fact that they're not asked is another way the healthcare system fails those people. Mm-hmm. And then when you're talking about access, zip code is the most accurate predictor of lifespan.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. So people in certain zip codes live longer than other zip codes, and it's for these reasons. It's for access. And it does tend to be people, zip codes with more people of color, lower SES. Like, they don't have the access to these things. And they're also the ones with the higher ACE scores. So it's just this ongoing, in so many ways, that our system just fails these, you know, just caters to the privileged populations and fails, these minority populations. And so much of this is cyclical, like mm-hmm. the intergenerational stuff we talked about, like if you have a trauma, an ACE, and then, you know, you use substances to cope, which is not like, we want to like clarify that that is an illness in itself. Like, that's not just like irresponsible coping. Like,
right.
And then that itself is an ACE for the future generation. And then that fight, flight, freeze, fawn response creates a likelihood for someone to commit these, mm-hmm. Traumas on others, like someone who is not regulated and has, mm-hmm. you know, it has that trauma stored in their body is more likely going to deal with their emotions by abusing their partner. And then that's going to cause the children to have that ACE. And then they're, you know, it's just, you know, it's, and then when they don't have the access to the care, it's just going to keep going. And then the you know, more societal ways that it's, cyclical, you know, like we've said, the lack of access, which makes them not get the treatment, and then they keep it keeps going, and it's really shitty.
Yeah, absolutely, that's sort of where ACEs has gone, is doing the, you know, encouraging trauma-informed care and giving practitioners a way to sort of gauge and really quantify what someone's risk is. But are they using it? I mean, is this something that people are actually putting into practice? I've never had a doctor ever ask me what my ACE score was or give me an ACE test to take.
It's so easy. ACE is 10 questions. Like,
yeah, it's
like ACE test. It's not hard.
It's so easy to give that. And I've never had that. And, and I mean, obviously, you know, maybe I'm not the demographic that they would be like, oh, well, we should give her an ACE score, but you should give it to everybody, because everybody has something. And also if you're seeing a, if you're seeing a patient for something chronic or you're concerned about their behaviors, their health choices, then maybe look at where is that coming from, and what is the source of that, and why are they doing this, using this to cope? Like most people, this, I believe most people are not trying to harm themselves, right? Like they're not trying to do things that are dangerous or bad for them or hurt other people just because that's what they want, right? They're doing it because they don't know what else to do. When we have unhealthy or unhelpful coping skills, it's because we don't have anything better to replace them with, or because we are still under so much stress. Maybe we had these experiences as a child and we've grown up and we are still experiencing these things and we have no other way of coping. And that's why you'll see a lot of people in those circumstances turn to substance use or turn to maybe high risk, you know, sexual behaviors or, you know, they're not going to the doctor. They're not getting preventative care because why? And my doctor's not listening. My doctor doesn't understand. They blame me. They tell me I need to do all these things, you know? So it just becomes a wall that it's harder and harder for people to climb. And really, I think that's the thing about traumas. When you have trauma, everything's harder. Mm-hmm. Everything's harder for you.
Yeah. You can't go about everything is harder. And another thing that prevents access is that if you grow up in this environment and you're, you know, surrounded your family, your neighbors, mm-hmm. your, you know, and this is what you know, then when you see it as an adult, you don't realize that it's even an ACE. You're like, oh, this is just how life is. So even if you do have access to care, you're not even going to know to seek it out because you're like, this is just what life is. Yeah, and why right. would you know any different? Why would you know any different if you've never been around anything mm-hmm. different?
Yeah, right. It becomes normalized and that's just the way things are. And you just keep moving. And yeah. Well, so if anyone, there's lots of stuff out there about ACEs, but one website that could give you a lot of information if you want to learn more is aces2high.com. So that's ACES2TOO. High, HIGH.com, ACES2High. And it's all about ACEs. And it has a lot more recent updated information and literature and lingo about this. Cause this is an ongoing thing that, you know, they continue to study and refine it and figure out how to make it more inclusive and also how you can apply it to healthcare, because that's where it started, is how can we help people be healthier, but yeah, it kind of all goes back to trauma and
and speaking of applying it, so you know, to summarize, if you are a provider of any kind, mental health, you know, are gonna most like mental health therapists and et cetera. Usually I already ask about this stuff, mm-hmm. but if you are in the medical field, any field really, dietitian, because, you know, my dietitian always talks about how your gut health is affected by stress. Massage therapist, you know, you probably have some tension, muscle tension, anything, you know, you want to be trauma informed. You don't want to just be like, hey, give me all your traumas, you know, but pretty much any profession, most professions, helping professions should ask about these. And if you are a patient, client, you can just volunteer that information, even if you're not asked.
So. Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you're comfortable and if you have a good relationship with them, like, it's probably good to talk about those things with your provider or with whoever. And if you're comfortable saying those things, let them know too. Like, especially if we're talking about trauma informed, like, yeah, it's okay to massage me here. But I don't want you to massage me here or something like that. It's okay to advocate in that way. And this is harder for a lot of people, and especially more marginalized groups, but it's okay to stick up to your doctor and say, I don't want to talk about my weight with you because that's not what I'm here to see you for. And, it's okay to say those things, or no, I don't want to do that. No, I don't want to take, this round. I don't want to take this pill. Is there another way? Is there another intervention, something else I can do? So,
yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Well, that's our show. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow us on wherever you get your podcast, and we would really appreciate a rating, review, and a share.
And don't forget to follow the show's Instagram for updates on new episodes at Just Mental Health Podcast. And that's with a period between each of those words. This is Steph.
And Em signing off. Thanks for listening.